Two Dimension Podcast, Episode 12.
Here we go. Hello.
You're breaking up.
Wow, you sound like a robot.
Yeah, a video game.
I did not understand a thing Al was saying.
Oh, this is comedy gold. I'm recording this. This is going to be the episode.
Just us trying to get it all figured out, right?
Pretty much. All right, here he comes. Hello.
Okay, what about now?
Hey, sound good.
Rook.
All right.
Oh, that's perfect.
Oh, sweet, guys. Welcome to the club.
All right, all four of us.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. And this is a very special day because the four horsemen are all together. I'm your host, Dallas Busha, and gentlemen, would you like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Don.
I'm Al.
Rook.
All right. What's up, Don, Al, and Rook? What's up, boys? How's everything?
It's all right.
Cool.
Not much.
Well, we had some technical difficulties. This is the first time we've tried all four of us, so please bear with us, guys. But hopefully this is going to be a good show. So what do you guys think about this weather?
I like it.
Our horrible rainstorms we've had this week.
I am talking about this beautiful, beautiful, windy, cold weather outside. This is cold for Florida. It actually feels like the fall. I'm loving it.
God's air conditioning.
Hey, I work outside, so this is like beautiful to me. But I'm just, I love how the weathermen talk about how it's like Armageddon coming, and then we never get any rain.
Yeah.
I think that was down lower. Down south, they got hit.
Yeah. My family in Miami was telling me it was really raining pretty bad.
Oh,
yeah, we didn't. We just got the tip. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Yesterday, I know there was on the weather we saw. It was 100% chance of rain. Bennett, that works with us, Don. He had pointed that out. And I mean, it rained, but it wasn't bad. It really wasn't in St. Pete.
Yeah, it was a light sprinkle.
Yep.
I never saw rain at all yesterday. I had bright, sunny skies. It was a beautiful day to be working outside.
Nice.
That's awesome.
So, gentlemen, who here saw The Walking Dead, Season 2, Episode 1?
I did.
Certainly. Wouldn't miss it.
Ow. I did not. I did not. I'm sorry.
You know.
I was watching an awful football game. I'm sorry.
You know, this is my fault for not prepping the show, but Al, I'm going to apologize in advance because this is all about The Walking Dead.
You're going to ruin it for me, okay.
All right, well, we won't talk about the ending.
Did you watch it last season, Al?
I watched a couple of episodes.
I got to say, Walking Dead is quickly becoming synonymous with the fall for me, with Halloween especially, because last season when the first episode aired, I think it was Halloween night. And,
yes, it was.
Yeah, my wife and I were just like in our back room. We had the TV on. We had all the windows open. There was a beautiful breeze, and we were handing out candy while watching the show. And it was awesome. It was such a great night. And sure enough, last Sunday it was really nice outside. We had the windows open. You know, we threw the show on, and it did not disappoint. It was a fantastic episode.
You're nicer than I am, because when it came time for Walking Dead, the first season premiere on Halloween night, I shut off the lights in the house. I turned off the light on the porch. I didn't want any more trick-or-treaters at my house.
Yeah, me too. Especially those, like, 20-year-old trick-or-treaters that should be, like, you know, doing something else besides just coming up to my house and asking for candy.
And you know, you're probably right, Rook. I think, what time did the show come on? 10 o'clock, right? So I think all the trick-or-treaters should have been gone by then anyway, but for some reason I think we were still getting stragglers.
Yeah. Well, not in my neighborhood, man.
All right, so Al, we're not going to try, yes. We're not going to give anything away, no spoilers. This is a spoiler-free episode, but
I got to tell you something.
That's what she said. I got to
tell you something controversial to begin with. I love horror movies. As a matter of fact, I really want to do a blog about my reviews of horror movies, but I don't like zombies, man. It's like, this might be the exception. I watched an episode. I thought it was good, but that genre just doesn't do it for me, you know? So I don't have that, like, that great, like, you know, like, thrill to watch it. But I will watch it this season. I will comment on it.
You know, I think the zombies are kind of incidental in the show, and, the comic for that matter, because it's a survival horror. It's really about the people that are surviving from this catastrophe and surviving the environment that they're put in. So the zombies are kind of second. They're just kind of in the background. And I think that's the beauty of the show, and I know Rook will agree with me on that.
Oh, absolutely. The book, the show, and they've said it a few times in the preparation for this new season that you could go an entire episode without seeing a zombie, you know? Everything about this series has always been much more about the people and the reactions of the people and how they survive these things.
Yeah, it always seemed more like human stories to me in their interactions. The zombies are just some kind of threat. But it wasn't about them.
It was interesting, though, when the zombies did show up, it was dramatic tension. I mean, the scene in the where they were on the road and the RV broke down and they all had to hide, you know, underneath the cars and everything. Like, that whole scene, it just, the tension rose up. And it was because the zombies were there, but that could have been filled in with anything. It didn't have to be zombies. It was just whatever danger, you know, was irking them.
Oh yeah, you could have definitely filled in that that entire scene with, like, if you've seen the movie The Road, where the guys start, like one pops up and then suddenly another one pops up, and you know, you could put it into any kind of post-apocalyptic horror, but they're filling in the blank of the great enemy with zombies, and the way they do it, the way that they fill in the blank with the zombies is what I think is great.
Yeah, you know,
they're
you
not just showing, you know, something like, I don't know, Return of the Living Dead. Talk about a god awful zombie movie.
You mean the one where the zombies going like more brains or whatever?
Yeah, they're all chanting brains, and there's like a bunch of punk rock kids stuck in a graveyard in a mortuary.
I like that movie, man.
Oh, really? Oh.
Well, you oh, like bad. Well, Al likes bad movies, though.
So. Yes, I do. So that's my forte.
He just
so
added some dramatic tension to the podcast.
Well, you know what? In that case, Al, you might love the movie that's on right now on what channel is this? AMC, I think. Zombies on a Plane. Outbreak. you know. I mean, come on. Like, Snakes on a Plane wasn't bad enough. Now they decide to put zombies on a plane.
Well, okay, well, I'll have to check that out. Let me change the channel here. So anyway, sell me on The Walking Dead. Tell me why I have to watch this show and I'm going to love it.
Well, first off, let me just interject that, especially that scene, like we were saying, you could have put anything in with the zombies. That they're just incidental. The acting is really good, and I think the direction's pretty good in it too. You could have put puppies in there, and the actors would have made you believe that they were scared, and you would have been scared for them. You know, I mean, it's the show's a drama, and it does it's all about the characters and their interactions with each other and their relationships with each other, and just thrown in for tension is the environment they're in and how they have to deal with it, and how they deal with each other. It's Oh, God, I don't know.
Well, one of the things said when they were doing all the promotions for this new season was that, you know, last season you saw people die from zombie attacks and things like that. This season you're going to see people die, but it's not from the zombies. It's from within. It's from the survivors tearing each other apart. So think about it this way. You're not just seeing these people get attacked by zombies continuously. You're also seeing these people, the emotional responses between them as tension builds between different characters, such as, you know, Shane and between Rick and between his wife, you know, and everything like that. You're going to see the breakdowns of these relationships and you're going to see the endings of various relationships as they tear each other apart.
Okay. Oh, by the way, I'm watching this zombie movie on AMC, and it is pretty trashy.
I told you so.
So
I know it's on right now, but District 9 is on FX, so I'm like, I've got that on. I've actually never seen this movie before. It's
another Peter Jackson film?
Yeah. I went to see it. Yeah, I saw it at the theater. It was the one problem I didn't like with it was just how harsh everybody was in South Africa, where the movie was based. There wasn't one redeeming person in that entire country in the movie. And, you know, you're always going to find some good people. And,
wonder how South Africa feels about that.
Well, Kevin, my friend's from South Africa, and he liked the movie, but he was really embarrassed about it. And, of course, you know, he always brings up the things that South Africa went through in the past. But, this is too much.
I think that was part of the point, though, in putting it in South Africa, to show that even a spot in the world that has gone through so much, you interject another group to be subjugated, even in a place where so much has happened, that people can still become very much like this. I think that's part of the statement of this movie as well.
Well, and it was unique. All the technology and how they, you know, the way the aliens acted and stuff, it was incredible. It was well done and very believable.
Wasn't that movie kind of like an allegory, a take on apartheid or something like that? Wasn't how it said in South Africa? Yeah. So,
was it an intentional allegory, or do people take that as an allegory?
I think it was.
Yeah, watching it now, I would definitely say it was very intentionally done this way.
Yeah, it was.
You guys are making me want to watch this movie.
You never seen it?
No, I haven't.
Well, this is the first time I've ever seen it, too.
Oh, hey.
I went.
How did you know so much about it?
I went to see it when I was in the theater. Actually, one of my students, he goes to see all the movies. When that came out, one day he just said, I just saw the best science fiction movie I ever saw in my life. And to this day, it's still one of his top movies. He talks about it all the time.
Yeah, I can definitely see why.
But my wife and daughter saw it with me, and they were a little creeped out. There was things they liked. But, you know, it's so real. It gets brutal. And even though that, well, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. But that's the problem I had, was there wasn't one redeeming person in that whole movie. I hated them all across the board. So, you know.
Okay.
So,
don't want to see it.
Taking that thought back over to the subject of the night, in Walking Dead, in the books, I mean, you know, in the show, you know, you've got, as you would put it, redeemable characters, but in the book, every character has done something despicable. Every character has done something to make you think, God, what an ass. I'm really interested to see where they're going to take the show with these characters and if you're going to see the darker parts of each one of the characters in the show as well.
I think they will once people get more comfortable with the characters. I think in the comic book medium, it's a little easier to be adventurous like that and start with an entire group of irredeemable characters. But, you know, you have to have somebody to warm up to or somebody to follow on a television show, especially a widely broadcasted show like this. So I can see why they took this angle. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if later on, further down the road, once you get comfortable with the characters, you'll find some shocking things about their past.
So are they trying to portray maybe at some point in the future possibly that the humans are worse than the zombies? Is that kind of something that...
Well, I mean, if you think about it, in all honesty, with the zombie genre, the humans that survive are sometimes always worse than the zombies. The zombies are acting on base instincts, base reactions, the basic concepts of feeding and surviving in a very, very animalistic way, where humans are, well, much more of a... aggressively destructive.
Motivational nature.
Yeah, the motivations behind human survival isn't always, let's say, of the highest moral character. You know, you don't see a zombie eating another zombie. There has been instances in the books where they came across a group of survivors that were cannibals.
Mm.
Nice.
Well, it kind of reminds me of a little bit of the, obviously, the first, well, not the first, but the most popular, the most well-known of the zombie movies, which is Night of the Living Dead, where, you know, the zombies are on the outside and the people are stuck inside the house and they're all fighting and, you know, bitching and, you know, killing each other or hurting each other, you know, and it kind of seems like a similar kind of theme, but maybe taken to a more, you know, a larger, you know, a broader palette or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. That's just a trope of the genre. That's the kind of genre it's in. That's what these people do. And they're taking the old tried and true formula, but they are adding their own twist to it, and they're making you invest in the characters and in the people. Yeah. And that's why it's so damn interesting.
Well, if you think about it, like Al said, with the original Night of the Living Dead, what you had there was kind of a very kind of stated point about humanity. Even when faced with a unifying enemy, the humans still tore each other apart.
Right.
Good point.
Right.
So, you know, is it a question of good versus evil? Yeah, I'll leave that to other people. I think, all in all, the whole entire zombie genre is all about something that we can't quite understand, that we can't quite control, and will tear us apart.
I read a comment by somebody. I don't know if I agree with it, but at least the comment seemed interesting enough. They were talking about how, like, zombie movies or whatever usually get real popular in when like, you know, like, real life, you know, like, the country or the world is in real, like, you know, bad times or whatever. I don't know if you guys agree with it, but I have read that before.
I've heard certain similar things to that, not just about zombie films, but different genres and different types of films and ideas. Like, there's certain films that get really popular in times of war. Probably war films, actually. That's pretty stupid. But, yeah, I can see where you're coming from. And, God, I wish I had some more solid examples. But
I'm sorry, Don. Go ahead.
It's all Alan Moore's fault. And Watchmen and pirate comics are popular. And at the end, it was zombie comics.
I have to commend you on bringing Alan Moore into the show. And,
you're welcome.
Now, Al, it's your turn to bring Eerie and Creepy and Warren into the show. So good job.
I will. Just wait.
No, but I blame it all on Alan Moore. Everybody's following Alan Moore.
Okay. It's all about the Moore. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Rook.
Hey, by the way, Don, are you related? You're Don. Are you related to Alan Moore? No, I'm just kidding. Or whatever.
I don't know.
Well, what I was going to say to the comment about when these kind of films get, or these kind of genres get popular, you know, it's one of those, no matter how bad it seems, it could be worse kind of concepts. And I think that's where these kind of genres get their popularity from.
I think you hit the nail on the head.
With the economy the way it is, with the job market the way it is, no matter how bad it is, well, a zombie apocalypse is a hell of a lot worse.
Did you guys ever, well, originally it was a Vincent Price movie called The Last Man on Earth, but did you ever read I Am Legend or see the remake or The Omega Man or anything like that?
It's funny you mentioned that. My kid actually just started reading I Am Legend.
It's a great book.
Yeah, he picked it up in his science class because his science class, I guess, is an extended period. So they have a certain amount of time where they read. Well, he picked I Am Legend up off of the bookshelf.
Awesome. That's a great book.
Yeah, very good book. Horrible Will Smith movie, though.
I have to say I'm really glad to hear that your little boy is reading, too, especially in this day and age when there's so many other forms of media and entertainment. It's cool to see young kids actually reading physical books.
Oh, yeah, it is. And, you know, I joke with the guys at the comic book shop that it's all their fault. Because when he was about, I don't know, 4, they gave him his first Ashcan comic. You know, just a throwaway, you know. And when they first handed it to him, I was like, wow, an Ashcan. I didn't even know they made those anymore. But they handed it to him. And I tell you, that kid had me read it to him every night. And then he started reading it himself. So I really blame comic books for the way he reads, which is a good thing for comics, let me tell you.
And I think I can speak for all of us. It expanded my vocabulary, starting quite young, you know, reading a lot of this stuff. I mean, I think I'm pretty well-versed, thanks to comic books, for the most part.
Yep, yep, definitely. Yeah.
I say as I, like, stutter all over that sentence.
That's okay.
All right, well, why don't we take a...
I'm
edumacated. All right, let's take a quick music break. This
Nope, it's only been 15 minutes. You can't take a music break yet.
21 minutes, Don.
No.
What music are we playing?
This is a group called Groovy Cool. It's a buddy of ours, Ron Ray, is another one of his bands. We played a previous band of his on an earlier episode. This is a group that was around in the late 90s. So sit back and enjoy.
Pressed the parted lips to the glass, and snaked the tongue real fast. Laughing spoon fed scum in that laundromat. We silently bled for that moment to last. We'll be right back.
geez.
I know. All right, and we're back, guys. That was Groovy Cool. Hope you enjoyed it. So back on the topic of The Walking Dead. Gentlemen, how do you think we would fare if the four of us were the last four people on Earth and we were surrounded by a planet full of zombies? What would you guys do? I would hide behind Don, probably.
I'd go into comic shops and start grabbing all the books.
You would. Yeah, and then you'd amass a huge collection, and then you'd accidentally drop your glasses and step on them.
Twilight
Zone. There's other glasses on the planet.
Hey, I actually have a zombie apocalypse contingency plan, so...
Let's hear it.
This is something I've thought long and hard about.
We're listening.
Oh, God. You want me to go into it? All right.
Yes, sir. We already had your son's origin story. Now it's Rogue's contingency plan for a zombie apocalypse.
Well, this is something that has been discussed at length at the comic book shop. Steve gets the Walmart on Ridge Road, and I get the Sam's Club on 19. I picked Sam's Club because it's the closest to my house. I can easily turn it into a fortress, and there's plenty of food and supplies there. And I can also trade and barter with him for weapons if needed. Pretty much what I've got is a plan of that, and then I have a secondary fallout shelter over in Elfers, and then one up in Trinity as well.
Man, you really have thought about this, haven't you?
Yes, way too much, quite honestly. I've thought about it way too much.
You know, they never show that on, like, Walking Dead, where people live in warehouse stores or anything.
I get the little Corona, Rook.
It's a little Corona?
Yeah, it's a little bar, guys, off of Main Street. It's a cigar shop, so I'm calling that. I got dibs.
You can go ahead and have dibs on that, brother. I'll take the nice big warehouse.
Yeah, I never...
Make some break points.
I never thought of that. They don't ever... Do they do that in the comic? Have they ever showed people living in a warehouse store?
No. Thus far in the comic, you've had the camp outside Atlanta. There's been the prison. Herschel's Farm, which will be coming up this season. Actually, it'll be coming up next episode. You'll get to see Herschel and the farm.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Who cares?
That's just a minor thing, you know. I haven't said anything about what happens there. So.
Oh, I'm just joking.
Trust me, if they do Herschel's Farm the way they did in the book, it's going to get very interesting. Past that, where else have they been? They've been on the road, and now they're in the safe community. See how long the safe community lasts them, though. I don't think they're going to get another 10 issues out of this safe community, honestly.
How many issues has that gone on so far?
Oh, God, they're probably in the 90s now, if I'm not mistaken. We're probably getting close to issue 100.
I've got to commend.
I have all my books put away, I can tell you.
I got to commend Robert Kirkman for sticking on it for this long, especially in light of the fact that his show is so successful.
Oh, not only is the show successful, but Kirkman has branded everything with Walking Dead now. Do you know there's even a Walking Dead board game?
Walking Dead the Flamethrower!
Back in the 80s, wasn't there a comic book called The Walking Dead? I could have sworn I came across one in the garage of comics or whatever. You guys remember this or?
No, I've never heard of that.
Oh, I don't.
No, me neither.
See if I can. I'm gonna have to go back and dig it out. All right, I'm not sure if it was called The Walking Dead or The Living Dead, but it was from the 80s and it was a zombie book. And I could have. It's not the same guy. I forgot what the dude's name was, but okay, guys, never heard of it. I'll have to find it.
Probably Alan Moore.
Living Dead, because there's been the Living Dead comic for years and years, which really kind of resurfaced again on the shop shelves around town after Walking Dead got popular.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so does Walking Dead, is it going to have an ending, or is this just infinite?
You know what? I don't know that Kirkman has an ending planned for it. He's always said that no one is safe, that, you know, the story will go on, and, you know, pretty much don't get attached to anybody because they could die at any moment.
Which is clearly echoed.
The motto of the book.
It's clearly echoed in the first episode of this season.
Clearly echoed.
Yeah. Just trying to entice you, Al.
All right.
Well, I never read the comic. I remember when it came out on Halloween, somebody on Facebook posted it. They're waiting for it. So I watched it. I never missed an episode. I couldn't wait for the next episode. And it's funny, when I went to work, just this whole circle of people talking about the show. When it came on again this season, again, I'd have to say that's my favorite show. I've never touched the comic. I've never read it. I've always heard about it. But does it differ too much from the comic to the show?
There are some heavy variations from show to from comic to show. One particular character has lived far beyond their time frame in the comic book. And I'm kind of questioning how long he will survive. They seem to have made him quite the mainstay of a character. So I don't think they're going to be killing him off anytime soon, which should develop some interesting friction in the show, should he survive. As well as there's some characters that were created just for the show as well. Norman Reedus's character, the redneck with the crossbow, he does not exist at all in the comic. But my understanding is that he was such a fan of the comic, he convinced them to write him a role for the first season.
That's awesome.
Now, if you watch the credits of the first season, it says guest starring.
Oh.
It doesn't say that he's, you know, regular part of the cast. I don't think he was actually ever intended to be a regular part of the cast.
You know, I gotta say, I'm sorry.
Well, I just think he's really become a great, great character for the series.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. Dallas and I were talking about this earlier, that he was a wild card that you were just scared to death, you know, to be around in the first season. And now he's like a team player. He's helping people out. You, it seems like you can depend on him. He's a little more level-headed, and I have to say, awesome. You know?
Yeah. Well, no matter how much of a jerk they try and make him, I mean, crying out loud, this guy's riding around on a motorcycle with the SS painted on the tank. But yet, in the first episode, we see him put his hand out and help the one character up off the ground. I cannot think of what his name is, but he helps him up off the ground and everything. Where, you know, last season you expected him to shoot him in the face at any moment.
Well, that's what I like about the show. It shows all sides of people. It shows the good sides and the bad sides, which, unless you're on the movie District 9, you're going to have all sides to you. Is anybody else on here besides Rook and myself?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, I was just making sure we didn't lose you.
Sorry, I was talking to Ellie. So, yeah, it looks, Ellie, you're still there, right?
I'm here.
I gotta say, we were having a lot of difficulties earlier, but, I mean, everybody's hung on, knock on wood. Hopefully no one will cut out.
Cool.
Just for that, somebody's gonna drop out.
I know, that's why I said knock on wood.
Well, you know, that's one thing. I think we've all seen movies and TV shows based off of comics we liked, and most kind of times I'm never happy with them. I found that a lot of them I do like, they're kind of faithful to the feel of it, and they're faithful to most of it, but they still make some major changes in things. Walking Dead, I've never read the comic, but from what Rook tells me, it sounds like they did just that. Some of it is very faithful to the feeling, and others is completely different. They added other things, but it sounded like they made good decisions in what they added.
I think the most important part is keeping the spirit of it. And it's, I mean, it's easy to do because of the genre it is, but it also keeps that element of surprise. You really don't know what's going to happen to the characters. It keeps that drama that's inherent in the comic, and that's really why the comic is so popular. And I think it's faithful in that aspect.
Well, and one of the things that Kirkman said when he first went into negotiations for turning it into a television series was that he did not want it to follow the comic book 100%. Because, honestly, let's face it, if you're doing a television series about a book and you follow it 100% through, line for line, scene for scene, you're going to lose people halfway into the first season because everybody's going to go, oh, I know what's going to happen. Oh, I know what's going to happen. I don't need to watch this anymore. I've already seen this. So I think comic book adaptations need to be changed sometimes.
I completely agree. And like yeah. I was saying, like keeping along with the spirit, I mean, that goes along with a lot of other books to movies, keeping in the comic genre, even like a Spider-Man, or X-Men, or just anything like that. You have this concept, this idea of this character that's been around for 40, 50, 60 years. And as long as you maintain those ideas that were inherent in the character originally, then I think it's going to succeed. Whatever made this character, this story popular, those are the important parts to hold on to. If you're changing little things here and there, that's really all cosmetic. I don't really think it matters. I mean, I know it matters to a lot of diehard fans of, for instance, a lot of Spider-Man fans might get mad if they change some names around, they change some characters' stories around, but I don't think that's the point, because it's not that fun if you're going to just echo what's been done before in another medium. You need to keep it fresh.
Unless we talk about Spider-Man 3, which was just a complete piece of crap.
Yeah, I just that just popped in my head. I just used Spider-Man as an example because it came to me.
Yeah, no, I know, but still, Spider-Man 3 was just a god-awful piece of crap.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
I mean, they could have, honestly, to introduce Gwen Stacy in Spider-Man 3 was a waste. You could have put that character as any nameless, faceless blonde, and it would have worked out fine.
And now,
but to throw Gwen Stacy in there was just kind of like, we got to make the fans happy. Here's Gwen Stacy, now shut the hell up.
I think the thing of it is, I think it's a good idea to introduce her, but I don't think they realized that she needs to be such a focal point because she is so important to the integrity of that character, of who he is. I mean, that's a really important role that she plays in the history, in Spider-Man's story. And so, yeah, I think they overlooked a really important aspect when they underplayed her part in the movie.
Well, didn't they kind of like turn Mary Jane into Gwen Stacy in a way?
In the first movie, that's what I thought.
Well, I think in this new remake they're doing of Spider-Man that it's going to be Gwen Stacy and not Mary Jane.
Yeah, it's what's her name? It's the chick from Superbad.
Oh, wow. Really?
Who's going to be Spider-Man?
I like in the new Spider-Man that he's actually going to have the web shooters. That's something that I really missed.
What did he have in the other ones? I thought he had webbing.
That was part of his power, though. He made it himself.
Oh.
Yeah, it came out of his wrists.
Well, better than coming out of his nose.
Yeah, but, you know, one of the great things about Spider-Man was, you know, I always loved the issues where he ran out of webbing. And he went to shoot webbing at somebody, and he's like, "Oh crap," you know.
Yeah, in some of the books, he even modified it, where it was like some kind of sludge that would come out instead of the webbing. I can't remember who he's fighting. He'd play around with it too.
Who's going to play Spidey in the next movie?
James Garfield, I think his name is, something like that. Wait, wasn't that a president? It's Andrew Garfield or something like that. I can't.
Yeah,
remember.
I think it was. Yeah. Okay. Now, that character that threw webbing out of his nose, that was Booger Man, I think that was his name.
Oh, there really was a character like that?
No, I just made him up.
Wait a minute.
Power pachyderms or whatever they were.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't one of those Yeah, didn't the Spider-Man version of the Power Pachyderm shoot it out of his trunk?
You know who might have shot it out of his nose was Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham.
Peter Porker.
Rook, do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that was classic. That was classic, man.
Oh my God! Wow. All right.
So, gentlemen,
I think that's right up there with Howard the Duck for good ideas.
Oh, yeah, there's a good movie, huh?
Well, but you know, that comic book in the late 70s when that popped up, that was huge.
Yeah,
I remember I saw that at the 7-Eleven when I was a kid, and I thought, what, they're doing Donald Duck with a cigar? And the next thing you know, it was selling out everywhere. And I guess after it had been out a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, that first issue was worth $10. This is back in 1978.
Yep.
And which was major news, but Howard the Duck was one of, it only been out about a year or two, and they put it in the newspaper as a regular strip, and it was an extremely popular strip. And that's why Steve Engel, who wrote Steve Gerber?
Gerber.
Yeah, Steve Gerber. He wrote it, and he took Marvel to court over it, because I guess he wasn't getting royalties off the newspaper strip, and that's when go ahead.
Didn't Disney give him a hard time too?
Yeah, they had to do something. He had to change a little bit of his appearance. I think the color of him. He couldn't be white. He had to be a little yellow because he's too much like Donald Duck. But after the lawsuit thing, Howard the Duck just kind of vanished. I remember George Lucas was a huge fan of the comic. And that's why they were putting that movie out, which I guess was really, really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, but my wife loves it. She absolutely loves the Howard the Duck movie.
I've never seen it.
Well, if you like Leah Thompson, she looks really good in it, so, you know, that's...
Have you seen it? Did you watch the movie?
Oh, yeah, I saw it. Yeah, it was not very good.
Well, see, the thing that interested me was the Comics Journal had a little statue in their magazine of Howard the Duck, and it said that Lucasfilms optioned it, and they were doing it, and George Lucas said... They would not have Howard the Duck wouldn't be claymation or anything. Oh, how are they going to do that? And then somebody said, well, they're really good at coming up with all kinds of stuff. And I was in San Francisco when that movie came out, and I remember they had a picture of him on some magazine cover. And I looked at him and said, you've got to be kidding me. That's what they're doing? You know, it was just a little person in a suit. I mean, you could tell it was...
Yeah.
You know, so actually, I'm thinking about it. That's probably one of your favorite movies. You love bad movies.
Well, you know, it wasn't bad enough to be great.
I've never seen it.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty bad.
But it wasn't bad enough. It was actually had production values, and it was bad in the sense that it wasn't a good movie, but it wasn't like a real trashy movie. It wasn't trashy enough, anyway. To be great.
So,
yeah, not like Zombies on a Plane, right?
Turn that off. I'm watching a better one now. Bring Me the Head, Garcia. Now that's a great movie. You ever see that one?
Which movie is this?
Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
No,
I haven't seen that one either.
Oh, classic, man, classic. But anyway, that's a movie. The Walking Dead.
Well, did you guys read anything this week?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody want to talk about it?
Don, go ahead.
The only thing I'm reading right now is this. Is a book called Orcs. So, I'm not reading any comics right now. I got to get my ass to the shop.
Orcs, like in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, like it's all about the orcs' point of view. I've seen it sitting on the shelves of the bookstores many times, and I finally picked up a copy to read.
Don, what was that email you sent me today? The Occupy Mordor?
Oh, yeah.
It was like a picket sign.
I have to say, somebody on Facebook put it. It's got this really nice Lord of the Rings design. It says, Occupy Mordor. And it says, one ring cannot rule them all.
So I'm going to go picket with that sign. So, okay, Don,
hold on. Rook, how was the book?
So far it's good. You know, I'm only reading it sporadically whenever I get, 5 minutes between my stops and stuff. But, you know, it's, I don't know. I'm really not too far into it. I'm only in, like, the second chapter. So I really can't say how good or how bad it is yet. I usually wait to get about halfway through before I can really say too much about a book.
Okay. Sounds interesting, though.
Yeah, I always thought it was, and like I said, one of the bookstore in the mall was closing down and had everything like 70% off, so I picked up that and a couple of other books for dirt cheap.
Cool. All right, Al.
Yeah?
What are you reading?
Okay. Well, here's my Warren book. I was going through the... my stuff, and I found an old, I guess old, as in 77, that's pretty old, book called The Odd Comic World of Richard Corbin. Warren published this, and it's a collection of some of his underground work from the early 70s. I always liked Corbin, and, you know, I remember the first time I saw his work was in Creepy magazine, you know, and I was like, wow, this is kind of weird. It's kind of cartoony, but it's realistic, it's strange style, but I kind of like it. And then I remember going to a flea market in Miami, and they had like a kind of like a mini little head shop there, and they had undergrounds, and I was like, oh wow, I never seen these before. And there was a book called, I think it was called Ralph, and it was like a half human half dog sci-fi story, and it was by Corbin. I go, oh, this is really cool. So then I started really getting into his work, and then and for a while there in the 70s, Walden Books was selling underground. So I picked up, I think it was called Slow Death, and there was another one called Grim Wit, and they all had these little short stories by Corbin, and they were all, you know, I mean, you know his work. You've seen Dan and all that stuff, so you know what it is, but this stuff is more like, half of it's in black and white. Half of it isn't airbrush work. It's pen and ink work. And it's kind of weird. It's kind of crude, but it's also very well drawn and very good. And it's got some great stories in it. My favorite is one called Magnet Robot Biter, which is a takeoff on a Magnus Robot Fighter. And it's hilarious. It's like Magnus is like... going out of his way, beating up all these robots, and you know, at the end he gets his in return or whatever. There's a couple of sword and sorcery stories here, a lot of sci-fi, and his half the book is done is his airbrush work, and that's like, you know, the stuff that was Den and the heavy metal work and the Bat Out of Hell and all that stuff. So this is definitely brought back some memories, and it's all the stories are pretty, most of them are pretty humorous, and they're real spoofs of like what was popular at the time, like sword and sorcery and you know, the horror and the sci-fi or whatever. So yeah, it was fun to read this, and the best part was I was looking it up and I saw some guys had it on Amazon and they're asking like $60 or $70 for it, so I was like, hey, nice. So yeah, thumbs up. Odd Comic, cool. The Richard Corbin gets like a 10 for art, and yeah, about a 7 stories. Some of them are better than others, but they're all pretty funny. It's pretty R-rated. I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's not for kids, and it's kind of gory and kind of sexy, but it's a real cool book. So there you go.
I love me some Richard Corbin.
What's your favorite Richard Corbin work? Do you have one particular?
You know, I like his black and white ink work for whatever reason, because I just kind of liked the primitive. It was kind of like primitive, but really well drawn. So it kind of had an appeal to me, because it's like, okay, this is cartoony, this is rough, but the people look like they're realistic. This guy really knows how to draw. So I think that story into that magnet robot biter, that's one of my favorite of all time, because it's got a great ending to it, and it's like, it's hilarious, but obviously, you know, Dan is the classic one from heavy metal, and there was another one called Never Worlds or Neverwhere that was also pretty good too. So yeah, I would say like those are my favorites.
Who did Abraxas and the Spaceman?
That was Rick Veach.
That's Veach, right.
Yeah. And Steve, one of Steve Bissett. It was one of the other guys. It wasn't one just Rick guys. Veach.
It was Veach, I think. I don't think it was Bissett.
Well, it was Veach, and it was another guy as well. There's two of them. The big talk was they both graduated from the Cougar School.
Okay.
But Rick Veach is the one I always remember. But there was a second guy.
All right. Well, Bissett was his buddy, I think. So he may have been.
It might have been him. Too.
Yeah, it might have been him. So, yeah. That's my book of the week.
All right. Don, you want to take it next? Or?
All right. Well, the one I'm reading, it's Batman, Child of Dreams by Kiya Asamiya. It's a Japanese artist. It's kind of funny. I years ago, inadvertently, I found the series DC put out called Batman Death Mask. And it was by Yoshinori Natsumi, another manga artist. And I picked it up and thought, I read it. So this is really nice. So, I ended up getting all four issues. I thought the story would actually make a pretty good cartoon. It was the black and white manga style that they do now. And I guess the first thing I was thinking about was, that's kind of odd. I didn't think Japanese people would be into Batman. And then that's when I found that book I love so much, Bat Manga, which is done in the 60s when the TV show came out. And it was by Jiro Kawada, who created that cartoon character called Eight-Man that Al and I were talking about. Smoked a cigarette to get his powers.
Yeah, right.
But, anyway, I just found, I've always heard there was another, manga artist that did a Batman book. And I found it last weekend. I got a trade of it. I have to say, it's really nice. It's about a TV crew from Japan that comes to Gotham City to interview Batman. And some of them, Two-Face shows up, and then after they stop him, he ends up turning into a mummy. And they realize it wasn't Two-Face. Then the Penguin shows up, same thing. And I'm halfway through it, but it's really good. I'd give the story a 5, and I'd give the artwork a 7. But I'm actually really enjoying it. I'm glad I got it. Japanese people can do Batman pretty well.
All right. I read a book called Ethel and Ernest, A True Story. It's by a British author. He did some children's books named Raymond Briggs. He's fairly famous. He did the story The Snowman, which is also a short animated film. And basically, Ethel and Ernest, it's his real life story of his parents, who are Ethel and Ernest. And it's about a 100-page book, and it's set up in a series of 2 to 3 page vignettes of just different parts of their lives. And it starts in the late 20s when they meet, and it goes on to the early 70s when they die. And it just goes through their entire life, the ups and downs, getting married, buying their first home, having a child. It's interesting, all the news that they hear from the outside world is coming from the radio, because this is, it starts off before they had televisions in every home, the radio and the newspaper, and which is really ironic because those are two fairly dead mediums in this day and age. It's really a sign of the times. And it's a beautiful book, and I think the charm in it and the beauty in it is how subtle it is. You can burn through this book really fast, but if you step back and kind of take your time with it, you see these people grow and you see their relationship with each other. And then when little baby Raymond enters the picture, which is the author of the book, and as he's growing up, you see kind of, it's neat, his perspective on how his parents felt about him growing up. And it's just a real work of art. It's a beautiful book, and it's all it looks like it's watercolor. And it's written and drawn by Raymond Briggs. And I'd suggest that if you really like kind of slice of life stories, or if you like anything that has heart, it's a great book. And I'd give the story, it's kind of hard since it's really based on a true story and it's like a biography. I'd give the story an 8 and the art about a 7. But the beauty of the art is just the way it evokes the characters and the way it continues to tell the story. I really, really liked it, though. It was a beautiful, subtle book.
Cool.
So Rook, next week you going to read a comic book for us?
You know what? Actually, as I'm sitting here thinking, I should correct myself. I actually did read Ultimates Volume 1 again this week. So I don't know. Does rereading something count?
I count it. I'd count it.
No, I don't care.
If anybody's ever read Ultimates, you know, it's a great read. The artwork is beautiful. And, you know, one of the funny things is what got me to read it was I had a friend over and we were watching the preview for the Avengers movie coming up. And, you know, this series, they really did a lot in this series, I think, for setting up the ideas used in the current Marvel movies. So, you know, just off of a basis, for one thing, this is the series that introduced Nick Fury as Black Guy. You know, before we had always been used to the silver-haired, eye-patch-wearing Nick Fury, where in the Ultimates universe, Nick Fury walks in and, well, basically he looks identical to the way Samuel L. Jackson does in the movies. Mm. And there's even a part in the book where they're joking around about who would play them in a movie. And Nick Fury goes, well, obviously Samuel L. Jackson.
Did Brian Bendis write that?
What's that?
Did Brian Michael Bendis write The Ultimates?
No, I think Millar did, actually. Can't remember who the creative team is here. Hold on, you know what? I access to my bookshelf for once, so I can actually talk about who worked on what for once in my life. Look at this.
I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, I know. let's see here. The guys working on this were, yeah, Millar, Hitch, and Curry.
Oh, yeah, Brian Hitch.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. It's a good series, and, you know, I like I said, just seeing the commercials for the new Avengers movie kind of kick-started me to read it again. And like I said, I think if anybody really wants to get a little bit of an inkling of some of the ideas that set off the current Marvel movies, this is the series to read, because they're using a lot of these concepts that were built in the Ultimate series. And, you know, let's just talk about timeline here. This book was published back in 2002. So, you know, in 2002, and now we're in 2012, and you're seeing a lot of these ideas come to the silver screen. So, you know, I think kudos to Marvel for actually, you know, maybe doing a little planning ahead for once in their industry.
Nice. So, what do you give the story and art?
You know, overall, the story is just another Avengers story. It's done a little bit differently with some changes. I give the overall story a 7. The art, I think, is outstanding. I like the way that, you know, it's not, they didn't go for some of the typical garbage that is done in the Marvel Universe. They made Cap much more realistic and some various other things. I would just say that the art is probably a good 9.
Nice. Yeah, I like his work. It's very cinematic.
Mm-hmm. Very cinematic and much more realistic than anything else ever was in the comics. I think that's one of the points that I like the most about the Ultimates universe is they based it more on a more realistic concept than ever before.
Right. All right. Who's got the squeaky chair?
That was mine.
Well, boys, I'm gonna call it quits for the night because it's getting past my bedtime and I gotta work early in the morning.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think we all do.
Okay.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Fine, I don't have that excuse. All right, guys. Well, overall, I think it was a great show, and I'm really excited that the four of us finally got to do our first show, and I hope all you listeners out there enjoyed it also. If you want to hear more, we've got 11 more of these suckers, and you can find it at Two Dimension Comics. Wait, what is it, Don? Two Dimension Podcast. Thank you. TwoDimensionPodcast.blogspot.com. That's 2-T-W-O. And after the episodes, below the show notes, you'll see images and links about everything we've talked about. And then below that, you can add a comment. So go ahead and comment on the episode. We'll definitely write back to you. And you can also find us on Facebook as Two Dimension Podcast. Go ahead and friend us or like us, whatever. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on over there, too. So I guess that's going to wrap it up for this episode. So thanks for joining me, guys. And I hope everybody had a good time. And take care of yourselves.
You actually have all of us on one show.
Yeah, about time,
yeah,
right?
12 episodes.
Yeah, only 12. Well, let's see how many episodes it takes for the next time. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening out there. And take care of yourselves and read more comics.